So in the middle of middle of chapter 24, we're getting slowly towards the end of the section. Okay, now, in order to, from page, 59, in other words, or the Hebrew one is Lamed. Want to open the door? Josh? Let's see, sorry.
You have the door,
I think. So, in order to understand what we're going to learn today, it's page 59. And it's towards, it says, Lachain Omer Azal. That's why our rabbis told us, oh, welcome back.
Thank you.
So in order to understand what we're going to learn today, I was going to do this anyway, not only for Robin, but I was going to do it. It's actually important to have a quick summary of everything that we learned from chapter 18, right? Just because that's where the section started. It started 18 and finishes at the end of 25, which we're now in the middle of 24, right? But he starts to get, in the middle of this, he starts to get to the crux of where he's going with this, right? Let's just do a summary of from chapter 18. So until chapter 18, until chapter 18, the Alter Rebbe explained that in order to be a Beinoni, in order to aspire to be a Beinoni, you need to have Avas Hashem, you need to have love of Hashem, right? And how do you produce love of Hashem? So the different ways, the one way was full-blown emotional love of Hashem through hisbonus, through contemplation and reflection and understanding and learning and so on and so forth, about the greatness of Hashem. Then he went to another stage where he said, well, not everyone could do that. That's a very high madrega to actually develop a true, authentic, constant feelings of love of Hashem. So therefore, he went to another thing called love in seichel, in other words, to have intellectual love. He says everyone can do that. They have a head, and they can do that, and they can think, and they can learn. And then they can develop this love in an intellectual level where they sort of attracted to something, even though hasn't developed, it hasn't translated into a full-blown emotion. And that was also based on what Chazal tell us, that sometimes machshava toiva, if a person has a good thought, and Hashem will connect it to action. You bypass the need for full-blown emotional love. So the more you learn, the more you develop a mindset of Avas Hashem, of Avas Hashem, then that can affect the way you serve Hashem and be willing to be attracted to Hashem only exclusively and not to the other things that are not in line with connection with Hashem. Okay, that was that. Then, in Perek Yud Ches, in the 18th period, he started this journey, which is going to finish at the end of 25, saying the following, that Tanya was based on the pasuk, Ki korev elecha hadavar mo'ed, that this thing, this Torah, is very accessible to you, in your mouth, in your heart, in your actions, and says there, like even in your heart, in other words, everyone can develop this. What if a person can't really develop even intellectual love of Hashem, because he doesn't have that deep of an intellectual capacity, whatever the case is? So he went to a third option. And third option is the not developing a new love, but to be in touch with what we call the Ahava Mesoteris, the hidden love, right? That's what he said. He said, everyone has a hidden love to Hashem, a natural hidden love, which he then called, if you remember correctly, he called the Chochma of the Nefesh, right? The Chochma of the Nefesh. And the way it expressed itself, what's the proof that it exists? The proof that it exists is, it's always there. It's sometimes hidden and in Golus, whatever the case is. But we know that there's this natural love which we inherited from Avram Avinu, essentially, right? Which comes out in the fact that throughout the ages, even Jews who are very low level in observance or kosher bekalim, as he calls it, or weren't sort of deep or weren't so knowledgeable, etc., etc., and didn't necessarily even keep all the mitzvahs, but nevertheless, when they were faced with the situation of Avodah Zarah, where the choice was clear and it was abundantly clear to them that if they fall into the test, if they fail that test, it will be a complete disconnection from Hashem. Even those Jews, suddenly that brought out the Ava Mesateres, that brought out the hidden love, the Chochmah of the Nefesh, the deep Emunah, the deep Mesiris Nefesh, and it resulted in the concept of complete Mesiris Nefesh, they're willing even to give up their lives, right? So you see that that exists, right? Okay. But the obvious question is, that's good, that's very nice, so we all have that hidden love. But so far, in the Perek Yutches and 19 and so on, all that means is that that's true when it comes to Avodah Zarah. That's not true when it comes to anything else, necessarily. Because we don't see that same reaction with every other mitzvah, every other Avera, right? So therefore, what he did was, he started to explain in Perek Chof 20 and 21, what Anoichi Hashem Alekech, what Avodah Zarah actually means. No, belief in Hashem actually means, right? And to do that, he started talking about Anoichi Hashem Alekech, I am Hashem your God, you shouldn't have any other gods. And he spent 20 and 21 on the concept of Achdus Hashem, oneness of Hashem. Essentially, the oneness of Hashem there, he went in two stages. It was chapter 20, chapter 21. Chapter 20 was how the entire world is completely insignificant towards Hashem. And then 21, it took it even deeper. Where actually, the whole world is part of Hashem's existence, part of Hashem's reality, and part of Hashem's oneness, like the rays of the sun in the sun. I don't know if you remember that whole thing, right? Okay. What was the point of that? The point of that was, as he explained afterwards in 22 and in 23, that what that means is that we redefine the word Avodah Zarah. Okay? Idol worship. Idol worship is normally understood. Okay, maybe this is the way to put it, right? Idol worship is normally understood that it's a denial of Hashem's existence, right? Or it's an open... it's an open denial of Hashem's oneness, whatever the case is, right? In other words, it's denying Hashem's all-encompassing oneness. However, the way he explains in Tanya is that Avodah Zarah is not a denial that Hashem runs the world, or it's not a denial of Hashem's existence, but even it's a denial of the true meaning of I am Hashem your God in the Ten Commandments, which is, it's a denial of the oneness of Hashem. Right? So it's much broader than just denial of existence of Hashem, right? So if you do something or you believe something, that means that you believe that there are things that exist outside of Hashem's existence on a level, I mean, it's not halachic Avodah Zarah, but it is Avodah Zarah, right? From then, he went into the whole thing, therefore, to explain. This is in Perek Chof Gimel, in Perek 23. Explain, obviously, therefore, if everything is the oneness of Hashem, therefore, the only way to be really connected to Hashem is to do things that connect us to Hashem in order to live in a place which the oneness of Hashem is revealed, in order to get the highest, the life force, from the primius, from the essence of Hashem's will, not sort of behind the back door and the whole thing where he says how you give someone a present, but you throw it because you have to. So that's a different type of life. But if you want to really be part of the idea of chayim, of life, true life, it's only through connection to Hashem. What does connection to Hashem mean? Torah and mitzvahs. Right? Because he says Torah and mitzvahs are the limbs of Hashem. Torah is oneness of Hashem. In a way, explain that Torah is even deeper, but of course you have to do mitzvahs as well. Mitzvahs is the will of Hashem. With Torah, you become internalized, one with Hashem. And that's why we become. That's how we remain connected with the oneness of Hashem. Right. Then last week we started chapter 24. Okay. And he says he did the opposite, and that is what happens when you don't do mitzvahs. We do averus, right? And we explained last week that when you do averus, then you are disconnecting from Hashem, and you become connected with the idea of klipa. Right, the force of klipa. Now, let's just clarify this a little bit, because we started talking last week about klipa. What does klipa mean? Klipa is the forces that Hashem, the spiritual forces that Hashem created, which are hide Hashem's existence, hide Hashem's oneness. Therefore, being connected with klipa is similar to being involved in the concept of Avodah Zarah, right? And then he said something very sharp. He said that when you do an avera, right? When he does an avera, chas v'shalom, when he does something against Hashem, he's connecting to the idea of klipa, to the entity of klipa, and even worse than the klipa. Why? Because the klipa, we learn in the Gemara, klipa doesn't mean that they go completely against Hashem. But the example we gave was from Bilam. So Bilam's source, Bilam's life energy came from the world of klipa. And yet Bilam said that le'uchal laver es pi Hashem, I can't do anything against Hashem. Because the default klipa creation that Hashem created, the forces of klipa, right, are forces that acknowledge the sovereignty of Hashem. They acknowledge the control of Hashem. But they, like the Gemara says, the korulei elakod de lakaya. They call Hashem the God of other gods. So God is the ultimate God. They believe that. But there's other things that exist other than God. So Bilam, we know, was haughty. He was arrogant because he existed. And therefore, he wanted to do things against Hashem. He didn't believe that he has to be, he doesn't want to only be part of the oneness of Hashem, but he had no choice. And Hashem is the boss, right? And therefore, he was bad. He was klipa because he existed. And he existed as something who has the feeling of being outside of Hashem's oneness, and yet he was subservient to Hashem's will. So the klipa, the world of klipa, do not do things against Hashem completely, right? When a person does an avera, he's actually doing worse. He's denying the control of Hashem because he's saying, I can do something that Hashem doesn't want me to do. Hashem is not in charge. Hashem said to do this mitzvah, and I don't want to do it. Hashem says not to do this avera, and I'm doing an avera. So it's worse than klipa. Klipa doesn't deny Hashem's existence that way. Doesn't do things directly against control of Hashem. But the person does a very is, right? And therefore, and he says an interesting line we shouldn't touch on last week, but he says, the reason for that is because klipa, meaning the spiritual entity of klipa, is not part of, it doesn't enter into a physical body. But what he means by that is as follows. A physical coarse body, right? In other words, like this. The klipa that we engage in, the klipa that we are experiencing, we have a nefesh abamis, which is also klipa, right? But when a nefesh abamis comes into the body, it's coming into the physical world. And Chassidus explains there's a huge difference between the spiritual worlds that have klipa. For example, we have Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, they're all spiritual worlds, and they have klipa. Only Atzilis doesn't have klipa. Atzilis is only good. Even Bria has subtly a little bit of klipa, Yetzirah, and for sure Asiya, the spiritual world of Asiya. But all those klippas at the end of the day will never deny or go against the existence and control of Hashem.
Because God made klippa.
Correct.
So,
but the klippa that Hashem made in this world is different. The physical world is such a chiddush. The physical world is the only world that Hashem is completely hidden. To the point that this is a world that can feel itself something completely separate from Hashem. Even though it's not, but right? That's this world. So when we do something that is involved in klipa, we are people who exist in the physical body, we have an ability to do worse than klipa. We have the ability to actually deny the control of Hashem by doing averus and not doing mitzvahs, right? It gets worse, by the way, this chapter, just by the way. But it's okay. After chapter 25, he then goes into a whole section of that we shouldn't be down and we shouldn't be depressed and we should fight sadness. And it's probably in position very well, because after you learn this, then we can kind of almost want to give up. But no, but it's important to build this perspective. Obviously, we're not perfect. Hashem knows we're not perfect and so on, right?
But you wonder why he made us in this world, like,
because he wants us to bring him into that world.
I understand that, but it's food.
Sorry?
It's food. It's like putting every roadblock in your way.
Correct.
Why? But
because he gave us the ability to fight that, because it's the ultimate darkness. Hashem wanted a dira b'tachto, he wanted a dwelling place in the lower forms of existence. And you can't get lower form of existence in this world. He has to go to the rock bottom, right? And that's where we have to reveal Hashem. By the way, that's the flip side of it. So you can imagine the unbelievable greatness of doing a mitzvah in this world. He talks about later.
Can you give us an example of an avera?
Oi, that's very specific, right? And Averi is doing something. I mean, let's just be blunt here, right? I know we're all on a journey and we have to obviously grow in our own journey, but ultimately Averi is doing something that Hashem doesn't want us to do.
And is it different if it's, okay, I'm going to eat treif on purpose, mm-hmm. or it's inadvertent? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, of course. Of course inadvertent is different. No, of course.
But that's still an aveira.
In fact, it's an aveira because you're doing something that you're not connecting with the Kedusha of Hashem. But Shulis helps there. But in fact, it's... Look, nowadays we also say that people who don't do the right thing and are not keeping halacha and so on and so forth, many of them don't know, and we define them as what we call a captured child, right? So they don't get punished, they're not in the world of klipah to that extent, but constantly exists. Now, at the same time, we go and we try and get them closer to the Torah Mitzvah. Why do we do that? If they're off the hook, they're off the hook. Who cares, right? Because it's different being, but they're off the hook, but they're still not part of that world of life. They're still swimming around in the world of klipah. Not their fault, they won't get into trouble, they won't be punished. Okay, all good, but they're still not connecting to Hashem, right? So that's why we try our hardest to do mitzvah ourselves, to get other people to do mitzvahs. And to try and keep people away as much as possible, or at least to grow in that way. I mean, the way he starts off the chapter 24 is that it's got to do with the 365 negative commandments, and even the rabbinical prohibitions, because they're ultimately Hashem's will as well. So if we go against them, then we're disconnecting ourselves from the oneness of Hashem. And we're connecting with the world of Klippah, and in a way, worse than the world of Klippah, because we're making the conscious decision to do that. Because at the end of the day, once we know about it, we have a choice, right?
The forces of people are not entirely fulfilling Hashem's will.
What do you mean?
Well, they're acknowledging that God is the God of gods.
Mm-hmm.
But Balaam, for example...
Balaam really wanted to curse the Jewish people.
That's right.
But he didn't, unless Hashem allowed him to. And that's where he ended up blessing us. I heard a shiur from Rabbi Yehiel on this chapter. You have this friendship between Bilam the person and Bilam the clipper. When he was coming to curse us, he was coming using his clipper forces, which you couldn't do anything against Hashem's will. But him as a person, he was a bad person. Just like we do Averis, he for sure did Averis. Right? So he was a person that went against Hashem in his private life, but not as a prophet. Hashem made him as a prophet, but a clipper prophet, which still prevented him from doing anything against Hashem.
But to Lisa's point, is it the spiritual clipper doing its job?
It is doing its job.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's the point he's actually going to make in the next part of the chapter. We haven't got there yet. First of all, he's saying what they are. Mm-hmm. There are people still acknowledge the oneness of Hashem, which is not as bad as doing something against Hashem's will. Next part of the chapter, we'll also learn a different thing, that they're actually doing what Hashem wants them to do. Mm-hmm. The Etzahara is doing his job.
So we are worse.
Yeah. If we do, yeah, as we were saying, right?
Because we're choosing, and because we have some knowledge, which is what I was thinking about Bina. If you're ignorant, that's why Bina, your job is so hard. Right?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, of course. It's hard not only Bina, it's hard for every Jew. This is a hard thing.
I don't understand, but yeah. It's not a good... It's a good Bina pitch, but I don't have to pitch you a good Bina pitch. But
yeah, no, I'm saying... Okay. Okay, so what's he trying to say, really? He's getting to the crux already. He's already, even though it's chapter 24, not 25 yet, but he's getting to the point, right? That every mitzvah, or every mitzvah is connecting us to the oneness of Hashem. Every mitzvah essentially is the fulfillment of the first commandment, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm Hashem your God. Because every mitzvah you do in every Torah, you're learning, becoming part of the oneness of Hashem in a stronger way. And every avera is a violation of Lo Yi Elokecha. They shouldn't have any other gods. In other words, every myth, every avera is really avodah zarah.
And is intention counted as a mitzvah if you don't get to fulfill it?
Meaning?
From other people's perspective. So can you intend to do a mitzvah, but for some reason it doesn't happen? Does that get counted as a mitzvah?
So yes, because the Izzah Chazal, which Hashem considers if you've done the mitzvah, at some level. But you have to understand what intention means, not like...
No, turning up, but somehow going to visit someone who is not well because they've been discharged from hospital.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, no, so that's, yeah, that's part of the mitzvah, of course, of course. But I think what he means more is the mitzvah, I mean, what he's specifically referring to is the mitzvah, obligatory mitzvah, right? Like, you can't intend to light Shabbos candles and then not light it. Like, I mean, then the mitzvah is action, not right?
We will do, and then we'll understand. We have to do.
Correct.
Yeah.
Shavuos, right? Coming up to Shavuos.
Yeah.
And again, obviously, again, lots of people nowadays are in an interesting position because they can learn this Perek of Tanya, and they're not yet doing all the mitzvahs because they're on a journey, right? And that's okay. That's a practical thing. But as long as we're on the journey. And it's the same complication of people who are born from. The same thing, because what? You think keep you maybe keep Shabbos, but they still speak Lashon Hara, you know what I'm saying? So like, no one's perfect, but this is the perspective we have to try and build, and that perspective has to push us further into the journey. Now, the problem is like this. The problem he has to clarify is the following. This is what the next part of the chapter is about. If that's true, if we understand that now, right, that every mitzvah is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and every aver is Avodah Zarah. So how come this happens? Like, how come we don't give up our life, like the person who gave up life Avodah Zarah, right? So this is what he says now. So he says like this. Lachen Omer Hazal. That's why we have a Chazal. The Chazal says like this. Al Pasuk is Sister Ishtoi. This Chazal, this Maimer Chazal, comes from the Pasuk in Bamidbar, the part of the Torah where it talks about the woman who went astray and she committed or potentially committed adultery. You're familiar with, you know, I'm talking about the Soita, right? Soita was a woman who the husband suspects her of committing adultery. He asked her not to seclude himself and with a certain man, and she did, and there were witnesses, whatever. And there's a lot of grounds that she might have actually committed adultery, which of course is a big avera. Then he takes her to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Torah says there's a whole process, and she has to drink a certain solution of water, and if she's in fact guilty, so right away she becomes prohibited to live with her husband because she could have been an adulteress. And if she's proven to be innocent, then she goes back to her husband. If she's proven to be guilty, the water causes her to die. Okay. Now, the expression the Pasuk uses is ki siste ishtoi. It's got the letter shin tesei in it, which literally in the Chumash means the woman who goes astray. But the Gemara says that it's actually got the same letters as shtus, foolishness. Right? So the Gemara says the following thing. The Gemara says, Ein Adam Aver Avera V'chol. That a person doesn't do an Avera, any Avera, unless a spirit of foolishness, insanity, entered his mind. What does that mean? Right? Means like this, Afilo Isha Hamana Efes. Because even a woman who commits adultery, Shadai Takalahoi, so that at that moment she was sort of vulnerable, or she was didn't do the, you know, gave into a temptation, whatever the case is. Really, she actually would have had self-control and overcome her temptation to do that Avera, were not for that spirit of foolishness. What's the spirit of foolishness? The spirit of foolishness is the spirit within a person it's the spirit that comes in that conceals the hidden love that he spoke about in Perek Yud Ches. That's the natural chokhmah of the nefesh, the bitul of the nefesh. The part of the nefesh will give us mesirus nefesh, that's where emunah lives, mesirus nefesh lives. There's a ruach, there's a spirit of foolishness that conceals that chokhmah, conceals that conviction, right? What's that conviction? That conviction is ledofka be'emunas Hashem, to cleave to the faith of Hashem, v'yichudoy v'achdusay, and the oneness of Hashem. V'loy liparet chas shalom achdusay, not to depart or disconnect at all from His oneness. Afilu noitli misnafsha, imeno. Even if my soul is taken, even if I'm killed. L'avad avodah zarah chas v'sholem. Right, a person, the chokhmah is what causes a person not to serve avodah zarah, even if he's going to die. V'afilu b'shtachavo levado. Even if you're just going to bend towards avodah zarah without really believing in it. The famous story of Chana and the seven sons, right? You know what I'm talking about, the Chanukah story? where Antiochus said to the seventh son, you know the story? It's one of the most tragic stories. It's brought down in the Medrash. We normally connect it with Chanukah. It's not clear if it's actually 100% connected with Chanukah, but it's only brought down that way. Had his seven sons, Antiochus wanted them to serve idols, so he brought the oldest son to bow down to an idol, and said no. And he killed each son, all six sons, and then he came to the youngest son. And he kind of wanted to spare him, but he could have to save face himself, so he said to the son, I'm going to drop my ring, all I want you to do is to pick up the ring, so it should look like you're something of a dessert. But really, you're just picking up my ring. And the son refused, and he was also killed. Yeah. The whole story, then Chana went up, and she cried out to Hashem that Yitzchok only was one son, and she gave seven sons for the Akeh, the whole story. Right? But that's what he's bringing us, what he's referring to over here.
The same Chana from...
No, it's not the same Chana from the Rosh Hashanah after, no, different Chana. It's later on, it's the second...
But why did he want to be kind to the Rosh?
Well, he thought he'd give her a chance, like he'll convince... Yeah.
This is the Chana who never let the walls of her house see her head?
No, that's Kimchis.
Oh.
That's Kimchis. It's a different person. Okay. But the point is that throughout the ages, we find this unbelievable Mesiris Nefesh not to serve Avodah Zarah, even if it just looked like Avodah Zarah, right? Although just bowing down, Belisha Munu Klab Levkal, not even believing in it, right? So you would think, therefore, if every Aveira is the same thing, then the culture can, how much more so it should be, if a person will give up their life, how much more so they should be able to overcome the Yetzirah, the Taiva Sanir, and the temptation for adultery, Shem Yisurim Kalim, which is easier, Mimisa, than dying Hashem Yisurim, right? So what's the difference? It says, by Hefra, she says, because that difference between, by her, between the Isur Niuf, the Isur Ishtach Havod Avodah Zarah. So first of all, it's a spirit of foolishness which is covering up the love of Hashem. Second of all, that distinction that a person makes between one avera and the next, he says, that's a very not so important. Right? That's also a shtus, that's also a spirit of foolishness. To say that's not really like a berizor, right? Ugamke ruach hashtus the klipper, hamela beshes benefesh elekis ad bechim zachach b'shumot. The spirit of foolishness, what happens is, it comes into the body and it conceals the connection to Hashem, and it conceals the chokhmah of the nefesh. But he says a very important line. He says, "Ad bechinas chokhmah shabav, v'loy ad bechlal." It conceals the levels of the neshama until the level of chokhmah, but excluding the level of chokhmah. In other words, the level of chokhmah cannot be camouflaged, cannot be blocked by the ruach shtus, by the spirit of insanity.
That's why
when it comes to Avodah Zarah, where the ruach shtus cannot consent. No one in their right mind, no neshama that has that chokhmah shabav nefesh will tell you that buying down to an idol or mamash converting or being a whatever the case is not so bad. No, they know it's bad. It's clear. It's abundant. It's disconnected with Hashem. Right. So therefore, when it comes to something that is clearly challenging the chokhmah shabav nefesh, right, the ruach shtus doesn't work, and that's why people gave up their life over the Zohar. But when it comes to that woman who is giving to a temptation, that's just an example. We're talking about everyone. Everyone is giving a temptation to do something which is kenega, that goes against the ratzon of Hashem, right? There, the ruach shtus, the spirit of foolishness, can operate, can conceal the chokhmah of the nefesh, and can lead you to make this cheshbon that this is not as bad as Avodah Zarah, when in truth it is. Sorry?
What is the source of the spirit of foolishness?
I can't hear. What is the
what is the source of the spirit of foolishness?
Well, it comes from Klipa, obviously, but Hashem allows that to work its way into our neshama.
Does this absolve you of responsibility?
Sorry?
Does this absolve
No. That's the whole Tanya is telling you it doesn't absolve you from responsibility. The whole Tanya is you have to learn these chapters to know that the Ruach Shtus exists, and when you start making that cheshbon, you need to know it's a Ruach Shtus, and you have the ability to overcome that Ruach Shtus, which is the foundation of what he said before in Tanya, that every person has a choice.
Okay.
That Moyach Shalvev, the brain can overcome the heart, right? That whole idea. But it happens, the reason we have to work so hard there, where we don't have to work so hard by Avodah Zarah, is because it's a Ruach Shtus. Right? So he says, excluding why doesn't it block the chokhmah of the nefesh? Because the light of Hashem is revealed in the Chochmah. Chochmah, as we said before, Chochmah is bittul. Chochmah is like not a really entity, it's a bittul. Even Chochmah, in when we talk about intellectually Chochmah, we mean it's like a Chochmah is a recipient of something higher than Chochmah. That's why even in the intellectual process, we say it's a koyach, it's a power of the soul, but it's ma, what is it? It's like it doesn't exist yet because it's really completely subservient to something higher than it. And that's what we mean by the Chochmah of the Nefesh. The Chochmah of the Nefesh is the part of the Neshama that doesn't feel its own entity, it feels completely subservient to the light of Hashem. Which is why it's called a candle, if you remember correctly, that its whole purpose and its whole yearning is to become incorporated within Hashem's reality, Hashem's existence. Right? So that's the Ruach Shtus. That's the spirit of foolishness that tells us this. However, he says, Avol be'emes la'mitzor, but if we were to be honest, the truth is, that afilu avera kala, even a slight avera. Hare ha'overa overa rotzon elyon baruch hu. He who transgresses an avera is transgressing the will of Hashem. And therefore, it doesn't matter what the avera is, who betachlis hapirud, it's making you absolutely disconnected mi'chudoi ve'achduso yizbarech, from the oneness of Hashem, mesitra achra, yoyser mesitra achra, more than sitra achra v'klippa, as we said before, Anikro lakim acherim, avodah zorah mamash, and it's mamash like avodah zorah, right? Even worse than avodah zorah, because avodah zorah is a clipper, but this is even worse in a way because we're making the choice. And he says, and I says something interesting. He says, when a person has an avera, is also worse. V'yosu mikol advarim anishboim mena, he's worse than all the things in this world that come from clipper. For example. Shehem behemois, tzmeyois, non-kosher animals, we learned before, it's complete clipper, right? It's not even because noiga. A trefa animal is completely clipper, right? V'chayesh v'oifes meyim, non-kosher animals, or called birds, ushkotzim v'rimosim, and creepy crawlies and insects, all these things which are very trefa, right? All these things, a person has not very connects, is disconnected more from the oneness of Hashem than even these things. Why? Now he says a Kamaimer. He quotes a Chazal. Chazal says, when a person misbehaves, we tell him, Yitush Kodmach. That when Hashem created the world, Yitush Kodmach. Even an insect, I forgot which insect Yitush is, a bat or a, what does it say that? I don't know, what's English?
Net.
A gnat. Yeah. The gnat was created before you. Now, why does he use the word gnat? Why does he pick on that one? Right, because everything was created before the person, right? So just to clarify, there's a medrash that says, or Gemara that says like this, when a person is behaving himself, then the approach is, we tell the person, you know what, you're such a great person, that everything Hashem created was all a preparation for you. But when a person is doing avarice, we say, you know what, you're nothing. Who do you think you are anyways, right? Even a gnat was created before you, right? In other words, you're lower than the gnat, right? Why? So why the gnat? And that apparently is an animal that absorbs food but never gives out anything. It only absorbs but doesn't excrete. Now the way something is in Gashmias is an indication of how it is in Ruchnias. So interesting thing. The idea of yeah, so a gnat is an animal. Sorry, the second sentence, you mean? Yeah. Everything that happens in the physical world is an expression of what it resembles spiritually, right? So when there's an animal that can only take but can never expand or give out, that's actually a reference to something very, very low down in the clipper ladder. Because the giving out is a symbol of giving and the absorbing is absorbing. So a person absorbs, they're close to themselves, but you also give out, right? Which, I mean, is a symbol of giving. Whereas a yitush and that is such a low clipper that it's nothing, it only absorbs, right? And nevertheless, we say that came before the person. What person? The person doing an aveira, right? She klipa yoyset achtoyne v'rechoyke b'chidus ha'kedusha. It's so high, it's so distant from kedusha. It's the lowest clipper, that gnat. Hamashpes v'tachris harichu k'demes, and nevertheless, k'demes le'ish ha'choyte. Comes before the person did the avera. B'shtalshlus v'yiridas achayis v'ratz l'ali baruch hu v'kol shkeim v'shayim b'alachayim v'lo chayis rois shekul na. In other words, even the person that's not very is lower down than the gnat, even though the gnat is such a low clipper, right? Why? Because we'll see why in a second. What does it mean it's lower down? It means, as we said before, when Hashem, because everything has to have a life force from Hashem, right? But in Klippa, the life force is very diluted and very all-encompassing. It's not internalized, as we learned before. It's a very minimal dose of godly chayis. So when a person is doing an avera, that's what's happening to him. He's getting less of a more diluted life force from Hashem than the gnat is getting even, right? Now, why is that? Shekulam einam mishanim tafkidam, because all the animals, including the gnat, is only doing what Hashem wants it to do. At the end of the day, and they're not changing at all from what Hashem wanted to do. Upkudasa is barach shamra rucham, and it's the command of Hashem that's protecting them. The alfagav ilochazi, the animal or the klippa or whatever, might not be conscious of it, but that's what's happening, right? And we find this an interesting thing. He says he makes an interesting point. He says kmashakasuv. Hashem says in the Torah, if you go into Eretz Yisrael and you will do the right thing, you'll keep all the mitzvahs, the animals will be scared of you. I mean, our story is like that. I'll tell you a second. Chazal say that an animal will not have any effect on a person unless he sees an animal in front of him. He doesn't see the image of God. That's why we find stories about tzaddikim. Daniel, in Tanakh, was going to lies then, but much later in history, the Arachayim HaKadosh. The Arachayim HaKadosh, the great Kabbalist, lived in Talmud Baal Shem Tov, lived in Eretz Yisrael, I think. He's buried in Eretz Yisrael, for sure. I'm not sure if he lived in Eretz Yisrael his whole life, but he was unbelievable. He's a fascinating commentary on the Chumash, full of Kabbalah and lots of things. So the story was, I think it was in Turkey, maybe the Sultan or something captured him and had him thrown into a dungeon of lions. And they came a few days later to take out his bones, and he was fully okay. The lions were just...
They didn't saw Tzelem Elokim,
right? Yeah. Why? Because that's their role, and they wouldn't do anything that's against what Hashem's tafkid is.
But our life force changes.
Once. Of course, this is all. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. You need to understand. This is everything we're saying now. How the person is so disconnected from Hashem. We talk about at the time they're doing the Avera, right? Doesn't mean the person remains so disconnected, right? Because we have tshuva, that's all there. If you remember in the very, very beginning of Tanya.
The person can go straight from doing an Avera to doing this.
Correct. Yeah, but the problem is like this. It doesn't mean that every person is doing a mitzvah, then the dog won't bite him. Why? Because while it is true that every mitzvah is a mitzvah, and you can't take it away from a person, so doing a mitzvah is connecting with Hashem, but the Aveira is still there, unless it does tshuva. Understand? I mean, so two things can happen at the same time.
So the lions can eat us.
Yeah, in other words, don't walk in the lion's cave just yet.
The source, the vivifying source changes.
Of course, because as we do mitzvahs, then it's different.
So every nanosecond that we're being kept alive, the source is coming from a different place, potentially.
In different levels, yeah.
But then you're saying that there's still a...
Yeah. Okay. So this is the hard part, right? So at the very, very beginning of Tanya, when he was trying to establish what a benyan is, right? He said a benyan cannot mean, a true benyan cannot mean half mitzvahs, half averis. Remember that?
Right.
And he said, the reason is because when a person does an avera, at that moment it's called a rasha. If he does tshuva, that moment it's called a tzaddik, right? Okay, so it means a benyan is more of a collective... Yeah, so at the time of a mitzvah, that's why a time of a mitzvah person is more protected, the Gemara says. Does that mean overall he's protected? No, because he also has a virus, which he hasn't finished it yet.
So, Rabbi, is it the aspect of choice that is so fundamental to what you teach?
Yeah, but the question, the whole Tanya is like this, right? The whole Tanya is based on choice. It's based on the that you have a choice to be connected to Hashem because the brain rules the heart, right? So now, what does it mean the brain rules the heart? So you've got to have, but you've got to build up, there is a very strong Nefesh HaBamis who's trying to take you the other set, right? The choice is hard. In fact, so much so that he said before earlier, that when a person really wants to do that choice, he still needs Hashem's help, right? That's why we daven so we should do mitzvahs, we daven we should learn Torah properly, right? We daven every day. Because the struggle is enormous. But fundamentally, we are responsible because we have the choice. But to exercise that choice, there's work. And especially in Tanya, because it's a long, short way, remember? So therefore, in Tanya, the work to, for it to be sustainable and continuous, you've got to put in a lot of work. And that work has to do with connecting to the love of Hashem and building up a perspective. The last number of chapters, says 18, the perspective is building up, is this. This concept that to learn this and to understand that intrinsically you don't want to be disconnected from Hashem. And if you really internalize this concept that every avera you do, you are disconnected from Hashem. And every mitzvah you do, you are connecting to Hashem, the oneness of Hashem, that will allow you to make that choice.
Well, what did you say about the kalif and let's say the
sotah?
What was the
sotah? The sotah was different to the treif. So the treif is a treif animal, for example, right? It belongs to the world of klippa, correct?
Yeah.
But when you eat the treif, it's worse than the
treif.
If you choose to eat the treif, then it's worse. Then it's worse than the treif itself.
Yeah. And if I'm choosing,
because the lion is treif. The lion is klippa, correct? The dog is klippa. The chazir is klippa.
Yeah.
But it doesn't choose to be the clip. It is the clip, and it still recognizes Hashem, and it does its purpose.
Yeah.
Its purpose is to tempt you. Right?
Yeah.
That's why we have clip in the world. And it's doing a good job.
But when I choose my behavior differently, I am doing the worst thing.
Yeah, you're doing worse because you're going against what your tachlis is.
Exactly.
Your the chazal's role is to tempt you. Your role is to not eat it and to be connected to Hashem. When you make the choice to eat it, you're doing worse, right? Now, why do you do worse? How come you don't give up your life? How come you don't overcome? How come we don't overcome our temptation when we do things that aren't right? On different levels, could be mamash and avera, or could be like I spoke before, the bein is even someone that even eats kosher only for the right reasons, etc., right? It's because we have a rosh to us, because of the spirit of foolishness, that we don't see it like avodah zarah. We don't realize that it's disconnecting us from Hashem. But if we approach every mitzvah as being a fulfillment of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and we approach every Aveira as a violation of La Yilacha, it'll be much easier to make that choice.
But that spirit of foolishness isn't in the Chochmah.
No, but the problem is that Chochmah is only naturally ignited when it comes to real Aveda Zara. Because that's abundant, because there, real Aveda Zara is straight denial of Hashem's existence, right? And therefore, the spirit of foolishness cannot interfere with that. That's why with a Zora, you will give up something that's harder to give up than when you're eating something treif. And yet, you'll give up your life of a Zora, but you won't give up the temptation of eating treif. Why? That's the Ruach Shtus. That's the spirit of foolishness.
But it's worse than that. It's not just about eating treif. It's eating more than you actually need. It's even harder.
Correct. I was trying to be... Okay, that's... Again. It's a journey. Right? We went through this in great detail.
Have you not noticed I've lost weight since we've done
it? It's a journey. And also you have to prioritize the journey. It would be very silly if someone said, I'm only going to need exactly what I need to serve Hashem, but it's going to be treif. That would be ridiculous. Rather go and fress in a kosher restaurant than eat with self-control treif. Okay, so, right.
But it is important not to, that we don't prioritize sin.
Correct. And also sometimes it's okay to do things out of order. So sometimes because the Rebbe always say this, we live in a world, especially when it comes to mitzvahs, right? Like not avera is one thing, but when it comes to mitzvahs, we do any mitzvah we can, and we get other people to do any mitzvah we can. Like, I mean, we'll make a yid do shalach manas on Purim, even though it's only a mitzvah, drabbanan, a rabbinic mitzvah, but we know that he's not doing something much more important. Okay, it doesn't matter, but that any mitzvah is good, because you're connecting close with Hashem, and you're doing what you have to do. Okay. But I'm saying, that, right, it goes back to the discussion we've had many, many times. Are we really going to be abandoning? And most of us, I don't think so. Right? But we have to have the mindset, a Beinoni mindset, and aspire to be a Beinoni. Which means we learn this in Tanya, it should have an effect on us. We should do one mitzvah more, one avera less. Control ourselves more. Even if it works 1 week and next week it didn't work, it doesn't matter. At least that's why we have to keep learning it, right? So it is important. This is very, very important. It's important to be on the Beinoni train. Nowadays, can we say that, you know, I mean, yeah, as we said, we're Yidden and Mamash used to eat the bare minimum, right? Only because they only ate mamash what they could do to serve Hashem. Of course they made shuls kosher, everything. But I mean, okay, that's a different level. Each one on their own level. But the concept is to build this mindset and to understand that every time we make a conscious decision to do something wrong, it's disconnecting us from Hashem. But can we fight all the battles at once? No. So obviously you have to prioritize. Everyone in their own level has to keep growing. But growth is very important. Growth in this, right? Essentially, we have to, the way, and the truth is like this, especially nowadays, it's very difficult. Why? Like the Rebbe spoke in the last Maimer that the Rebbe published, the Rebbe spoke about Mesiras Nefesh, right? You see, really what he's talking about is having Mesiras Nefesh. We have to view every Avera like Avodah Zarah, and then be ready to give up a life. I don't think you even have to give up a life. You have to give up enjoyment for 5 minutes, right? So why is it so difficult? So there's Ruach Shtus and so on. But the Ruach Shtus today is much more difficult. Like Rebbe spoke once, in that moment, the Rebbe speaks about having Mesiras Nefesh, right? And he speaks about the Mesiras Nefesh of Russia and the Mesiras Nefesh of America. He doesn't say those words, but it's very obvious what he's talking about over there. He's talking about the Hasidim who lived in Russia and they had Mesiras Nefesh. And he says that when they, people who came afterwards to more affluent societies, very nicely, kindly says, it's not so recognizable, the Mesiras Nefesh. Okay. Why? Because, again, the Ruach Shtus is stronger nowadays. Because the openness of the threat is much less. So in Russia, where a person put a gun to your head and said, you have to break Shabbos, in other words. So then the fight was much clearer. That they're trying to bring you, communism was very clear, they're trying to tear you away from religion. They're trying to tear you away from being connected to Hashem. So therefore the ability to have a serious nefesh was easier. I'm not saying it's easy, it wasn't easy at all. It was very difficult, they gave their life for it.
But that's why separateness has always been such a big thing.
What do you mean separateness?
Yes, we need to keep ourselves separate.
Yeah, yeah. But our service of Hashem today, our test is to be in countries that allow us to serve Hashem and afford us all the resources and affluence and all that kind of stuff, and still to be different, right? In other words, what's easier, to get up to, you know, to not sleep and go to a shir, or to eat in Russia to give up his life? So obviously the Russia guy was much, much harder, and yet they did it and we don't. That's what this tap's all about. We have to view every mitzvah as kiddush Hashem, as anoich Hashem alakecha, and every aveda as disconnecting us from Hashem. And when we do that, so then we're more motivated to say, no, I'm going to go on Mesiras Nefesh, which doesn't mean Mesiras Nefesh. It all means put a self-discipline, right? Which is hard, sometimes very hard, right? This is hard because of the social pressure. Because the Ruach Shtus is stronger today. We just don't see it that way. We don't see society as trying to rip us away from religion. We see society as affording us conveniences and pleasures and societal norms and things like that, social pressures, all that kind of stuff, right? Part of the serious nefesh is self-discipline, part of the serious nefesh is fighting the current, fighting the worldliness, fighting societal norms, right? All those things, but it's the same idea. Now, it does make the point, by the way, I'll just do this outside a little bit. He says that with the differences, like you said before, that it is possible that when a person does that and he fails the test, he doesn't have avera and he's disconnected from Hashem, so he makes a distinction here. If it's, you know, we have in the Torah mitzvahs that are not, there's mitzvahs that are kores, which are, the Torah says, are very severe. Chometz and Pesach and things like that, right? And then we have mitzvahs that are not kores. They don't carry the punishment of excision or death or whatever the case is. But it does, they still damage your connection with Hashem. So it is a form of avodah zarah, nevertheless. But he says, right after that, it is easier then to bring your soul back from the world of klipa into the world of connection to Hashem, right? And you can do it. You can reignite your love for Hashem. You can do tshuva. You can reignite your love for Hashem that was really always there. But what happens is a person always has the chachma shuvah nefesh, right? It just was in a very deep golus. So even a person does the avera, okay, but afterwards he can reignite it. Now, obviously it's harder with the very severe averas because that's damaged your connection in a much, much greater way. And therefore to reconnect is harder and it's a deeper tshuva, but of course possible, right? So that's all true. But Nevertheless, even the light Averis, even the rabbinic Averis, so to speak, are still a form of Avodah Zarah. They still disconnect you from Hashem. And that's why the perspective has to be to try and remove the Ruach Shtus, try and remove the spirit of foolishness, and to understand that, no, I don't want to do it. Why? Because I'm going to stand strong. Why am I going to stand strong? Because I don't want to be disconnected from Hashem. There's a line from the previous Rebbe brings it. In Yiddish, he says, Ayid nitaken nitavil. He brings in the Maimer of Basi Ligani, that a Jew doesn't want to and actually cannot become disconnected from Hashem. The reason that we do it sometimes is because of the spirit of foolishness. But, yeah.
Is there a good translation, foolishness?
I think actually the real translation probably is like somewhere between foolishness and insanity. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's falsehood, that's what it is, I guess, a spirit of falsehood. It's not a logical thing, in other words. Not like to do that very is logical, and not to do it means something. No, to do that very is illogical. It's a logical thing to do, because why would you want to separate yourself from Hashem? That's what it means, the spirit of foolishness. It's not logical. Right. And next week, we'll do chapter 25, where he's going to tie it all together and explain why that's got to do with the pasuk of Ki Korev Elecha Hashem, that all the Torah is close to us and accessible in our mouth and our heart and in action.
It's our foolishness, not the...
It's the spirit of foolishness which comes into us, which we buy into, which you have the choice not to buy into. Listen, we're doing chapter by chapter. We're not going to select. And you can't just take Exodus. You've got to take. It's a package deal. No, but as I say, it runs very important into the... Because what we'll learn is, see, the most important thing is to have this perspective to help us to Torah mitzvahs, right? What it can lead to, and this is what he's going to start in chapter 26, the whole thing about simcha and joy and thing, right? What it can lead to, I'll just share with this before you go. There was a saying amongst Hasidim, and Hasidim used to put a big emphasis on davening properly, and davening by voice, and davening, not just saying the words, but really getting involved in that. He used to say that a Hasid is someone, it's possible that he could do a terrible avera at night, and the next morning he should daven like a Hasid. So he said, how can I be him? Right? So the point is like this. The point is that we have to know, it all comes down to bittul, right? What is bittul? Bittul means we want to be subservient to Hashem, we want to do what Hashem wants us to do, right? Okay. So we mess up. We're doing our very, let's say, right? We shouldn't. We forgot about what it says here. And then we feel guilty. I serve David Azar, exactly, right? So you feel like, how can I daven the next morning properly? How can I come to Hashem, right? That in itself is a real Avodah Zarah. You know why? Because that's about us. It's about me. It's not about you. It's about connecting to Hashem. So the next morning, Hashem wants you to daven, so daven. Yesterday you did a terrible thing. You disconnect yourself from Hashem. Right? Okay, so you need to take responsibility for that. Now time's to do tshuva for that. And you'll take responsibility. You'll do what needs to be done. But right now you have a role. The journey continues. You have a role today. Your role is to daven, so daven. The feeling guilty, how can I do it because I feel so bad, I disconnect. In other words, if I use this to induce guilt, that is the worst of it, is it? So I'm making it about me. What do you mean I can't daven? Because I did something wrong yesterday. It's all about the I then. I can't daven because I messed up. What do you mean? Hashem wants you to daven, daven. No matter what you did yesterday. Which is a very strong point, but a very empowering point, actually. It doesn't mean you mustn't take responsibility. You must take responsibility. That's why later on explains in those chapters, there's Krishma at night, there's time to reflect, there's time to do tshuva, there's Yom Kippur, there's time to feel bad even, right? But you'll do it when you need to do it. You'll do it when Hashem says you should do it, not when you want to do it. All right.